Hello, welcome to Viva Politics Podcast, a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by a Generation X veteran political consultant, Dr. Laura Barbarena, and the Viva Politics Office millennial, Lauren Coronado. So hi, I'm Lauren.
Hi, and I'm Dr. Laura.
And welcome to episode 2 of the Viva Politics podcast. This week we're going to be talking about no comment.
No comment. The infamous two words that come out of the mouths of politicians, corporate CEOs, et cetera, et cetera. And how did we begin talking about this? Do you recall?
I think one of our local elected officials said no comment when That's it made right. absolutely no sense to say no comment.
Exactly. In fact, what do we in the PR world, no comment is like you just don't do it. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how to say it. How do I say it nicely? It's if you're a spokesperson, just don't ever say no comment. And that is just sort of the pitfall for folks in public relations and media relations, because really it just gives the wrong perception, mm-hmm. not just to audiences, but to the journalists that you're trying to create a relationship with.
So why do people say no comment?
Well, I think oftentimes it's kind of a security blanket. I think people often, like, they may be caught off guard by a question that they don't know the answer to, or they may be afraid that if they say something, it might make the matters worse. So they'll tend to say no comment, as it's really a security blanket because it's kind of like the first thing that pops in your head. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, what it really does is it actually implies that you're like guilty and that yeah. you might be under wrong.
That's how I always take it. Yeah. Like, you couldn't think of anything else to say because everything would lead back to you being guilty.
Right, right. And then oftentimes, you know, because... And that's in a situation where someone's maybe making an accusation or can you please make a comment about XYZ? Mm-hmm. And they'll say no comment as a security blanket, thinking I will absolve myself from guilt when it actually is doing the opposite thing.
Yeah.
But then oftentimes
I plead the fifth, right, like no
exactly.
comment.
Right. I'm pleading the fifth, therefore it's no comment. But really what you're doing is you're kind of telling the journalist, I don't have time or don't need to talk to you. And there's still ways that if you don't have the words or the answer to the question, there are still ways that you can answer a journalist without making it seem like you're guilty, right? Or making mm-hmm. it seem like you're uninterested or don't care. You know, I want to talk about that a little bit more, but there's also people often, especially in politics, will use no comment when reacting to their opponents on something. So say, for instance, a journalist is asking a candidate to comment on something that the opponent did or didn't do. So then what happens yes. is, you know, this is not a feeling of guilt, but it's a missed opportunity in
Absolutely.
Which the candidate can actually give their message.
It's not time to talk about yourself.
Right, exactly. and we kind of call that in the business the three-legged dog, right, where when given the microphone and the opportunity, you always go back to your message. And the reason we call it the three-legged dog is because no matter what question you're asked, the idea is that and we use the three-legged dog because it's kind of an exercise. So if we were to be playing a game, the game would be, no matter what question I ask you, Lauren, yeah. You need to talk about your three-legged dog, yeah. right? So if I say something to the effect of, you know, what do you think of the U.S. immigration policy right now, Lauren?
But I actually want to talk about the environment. The environment is my three-legged dog.
Right.
Got to bring it full circle.
Right. And you've got to figure out a way, you know, in a communications way to pivot so that you're talking about your particular issue or going back. And oftentimes, you know, I see this a lot where politicians do miss the opportunity to bring it back to their own message when given the opportunity to comment on an opponent. And they'll think, well, I don't want to comment on the opponent because mm-hmm. then, you know, we're giving the opponent
Or they do comment on the opponent.
Exactly. Or they do comment on the opponent, which is not a good thing because then you're essentially echoing their message.
Yes.
But let's go back a little bit to this notion of the perception of guilt, because I do feel like the no comment is, like what you mentioned, it is the equivalent of pleading the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination.
And self-incrimination in the media.
Right. And so because it does imply guilt and wrongdoing, it's always best to, well, like we said, just don't say it, right? So,
yeah.
But it's easy to say don't say it, But what should you say instead of saying no comment?
So you definitely have to find that balance of in crisis communication, not over communicating to people that don't need to know what fully happened or where you messed up, but also offer more than no comment.
Right. And so there's ways that you can get around the no comment, right? So instead of saying no comment, you could and this is always an easy pivot, right? Well, that's an interesting question. But we really should be talking about right now is, right? And that's kind of an easy pivot, right?
That's your three-legged story.
Right, your environment story. So that's really great about immigration policy. But what's an even more important question is what were we doing about the environment, right? So you pivot. And that's kind of, and you see that often used. And I know people get, they say, oh, well, that's just them not answering the question. Well,
exactly.
Exactly, right? Which is interesting, right? Because I think a lot of times people go into interviews thinking that somehow they have the obligation to answer the questions, but the reality is you have an obligation to get your message across, right?
Yes.
And so irrespective of what the question is, you want to be able to stay on message, which
without
can
being
get
misleading, too.
Right.
It's like you don't want to go out and straight lie.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. There's also, you know,
it's a little sleight of hand to distract from the issue that they want you to talk about that you don't want to talk about.
Right, right. And then oftentimes there is, I mean, you could give perfectly good excuses for not wanting to comment on something. Mm-hmm. So say something, say if they're wanting you to comment on something, you could simply just say, we're prohibited by law for, you know, to confirm or deny any of what you're saying. Obviously, it has to be true, right? You can't just say that, oh, just prohibited by law. No. So obviously, it has to be the case that they really are prohibited from by law from confirming.
It's a good out if you can use it.
Right, if you're using it. And also you can kind of do the stall, which is, you know, we don't have information on this at this moment, but we'll be happy to come back and brief you in a couple
I've
of hours.
That before.
Right. Where I'm not certain at this moment, but let me get back to you, because that still gives a sense of transparency, because I think that's the biggest thing about the no comment is that it seems to show a lack of transparency on behalf of on whoever, and especially in crisis management where there's victims involved.
And it's so hard when something that feels like earth-shattering has happened or your client has messed up and like you just want to say like no comment, get out of my face. We need to come up with the game plan behind the scenes to deal with this. So definitely when you're in crisis mode, it's really hard not to say no comment.
Right. It really is. But the key is to you know, say something that we're evaluating the situation and we'll get back to you, especially when they're, you know, in the crisis situation where they're all victims involved, it can be very, it can be very sensitive. But, and just some sort of key ways, and I like to talk about this because if you are in a situation where you're being asked to comment, you always want to appear to either be caring, right? So like, oh, I'm very concerned about this, or we're very concerned. However, we're still investigating it, or we're looking into it, or this does concern me, but I'm going to look into it further and get back to you, or something like that, right? As a way to show that you're concerned. Also, that you're capable. Here's the other, we're currently gathering the facts, and once we understand the situation, we'll get back to you, right? So to show that you have the capability of dealing with the situation, and but that you're in sort of crisis mode of collecting the information. And then finally, you know, transparency. We'll tell you more as we know it, right? So at this, we'll tell you more as we know it. So we might not have the information currently, but we'll get back to you once we know more. Any of those kinds of comments are always better than the no comment. And I'm often shocked to see how often no comment is used.
So is it ever appropriate to say no comment? Is there ever a situation where no comment is the best answer?
I think no comment can convey sort of sarcasm if it's done in the right way. In other words, if someone is saying something that's absolutely ludicrous, like, you know, Lauren is from the planet Mars and, you know, eats dead babies, right? Yeah. Like, and then
it's like,
you know,
no comment, wink, wink.
Like, yeah, no comment. Like, yeah, like, please, like, you're going to even have me comment on this? Like, you know, get real.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that also only works when you have a relationship with a journalist, and then you can tell them sort of off the record, listen, the reason I'm not commenting on this is because it's simply ridiculous, and there's no basis to the story, right? But what's important here is that you're you're having a relationships with journalists, right? And getting to know the people that are writing the stories. There's often a core group of journalists who are writing about a particular race or a particular issue. And establishing those relationships and trust with those journalists becomes critical, because then you can tell them, you know, off the record, hey, you know, I'm not able to comment because it is under, you know, legal scrutiny or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. It's when you kind of use no comment and creating an adverse relationship with the journalist that it becomes, you know, even more problematic. Because then, it allows the journalist and the audience, frankly, to sort of fill in the blank with whatever they think
whatever
might be.
The wildest outcome of that situation could be becomes the reality in their heads.
Right. And then there's always the other pivot that I like is instead of commenting on that right now, let me point out that that's a really good pivot to utilize. So if, say, someone's calling and wanting to talk to you about climate action plan, and you say, that's a great question. However, what we really should be talking about is transportation, right? And so that you pivot into to whatever issue that you're interested in. And I know it's hard and it seems frustrating because you feel like you're not answering the reporter's question. And people think, oh, they're just being,
look at this shiny thing.
Yeah, look at the shiny, or like not wanting to answer the question. But at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to quote you if you're not answering the question, right? They have to quote you on what you're being said. And I also go back to that question, like, is there ever a time that no comment is warranted? But I think you could always say, I'm going to be preparing a written statement, and we'll be releasing that to you shortly. So it gives you an opportunity to write. And the other thing about writing a written statement is the paper or the journalist or radio station or TV journalist, they only can report what's in that written statement.
That's what I was about to say. As the consultant, having a client go rogue when they're commenting is so frustrating. With a written statement, like, these are their words. This is all you can talk about.
Right, right. And so it really controls the narrative of what can be reported. And oftentimes I see a mistake of these written comments. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm going to do a written statement, right? I'm going to comment on XYZ and here's my written statement. And it's like 4 pages long. It's like, no. Because then what you're doing is you're allowing the journalist to edit five pages down to 2 sentences.
You get 3 paragraphs.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even 3 paragraphs in some cases is a lot, right? You really want to keep it down to 2 to 3 sentences, if possible, like as your core. Mm-hmm. And then sort of just
the
quote. The quote that would be. Because most of the time, especially on TV journalism, they will actually show the typewritten words on the screen.
Yes.
And so, so you got to put that into consideration as you think about what your written statement is going to
especially be. Especially for TV, because their segments aren't more than 1 minute, 2 minutes, depending on their story. It moves very quickly, so you need whatever you said to be competent and empathetic in that 20 seconds of the segment that you're getting for your statement.
Right. And remember, if you're explaining, you're probably losing, mm-hmm. right? So if you're trying to explain something, chances are that you're chasing the narrative rather than directing the narrative.
Yeah. Don't let the media set your agenda.
Exactly, which we talked about media agenda setting in a previous podcast. But yeah, and I think also social media, I think it's also kind of bait for politicians to feel like they have to comment on everything, right?
Yes.
So on the one extreme, we have the no comment, which is, I'm not going to comment and I refuse to speak about it. And then on the other end, you're like, let me comment about every single thing and every single thing that's been posted on my Facebook page.
Yes, every comment from every rando in their mom's basement commenting on my Instagram post, you do not need to respond to.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of certainly one of the pitfalls that a lot of politicians have, is they feel like they have this Facebook page or an Instagram and they get comments and they feel like they have to respond to every single comment.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, I guess kind of a not commenting on every single comment is a no comment.
Yeah.
but sometimes, and it really just depends on what the comment is.
Mm-hmm.
You can often we've had clients before where someone will make a comment and it's very specific about their neighborhood. And so then we'll reply to the post by saying, please contact my official office if it's an incumbent, right? And be able to, you know, to pitch it to the official office, because a lot of times those comments are about official questions and official duties.
Yeah. Take care of that offline, especially if it's such a specific, like...
Right, exactly.
The left corner of my street sidewalk is broken. Like, the world doesn't need to know how you're going to fix that.
Right. And then there's, you know, you have Messenger, right? So if someone is posting something on your... say your Facebook fan page and they're asking you a question, you know, you can simply say, thanks for this great question. I'll be messaging you and to talk about it. Right.
Yeah.
And then being able to do that offline where you're not making it a public forum, but you're keeping it private because a lot of times
don't over communicate.
Yeah, right. You don't want to over communicate, which is, and I think one of the sort of the hard questions that candidates deal with right now, because social media can be such a time sucker.
Oh yes.
It's, you know, how much time do you put the candidate to actually be answering and responding to social media?
Yeah.
You know, we have some clients who are very much hands-on in their own social media and they want to respond and do their own social media. And we have others who basically let us do it for them.
Yes.
But I think it, you know, at the end of the day, there needs to be a voice, right? A tone that is set that is consistent throughout the campaign. But then also limiting the candidates on social media, because it can get in their heads, right? And I often tell our clients, don't look at Facebook. Like, that's our job.
Yeah.
You don't look at Facebook, because it can be negative. There can be a lot of negative comments, and it really affects their psyche and frankly makes them feel like, puts them in a bad mood. I don't have to say it any other way, because they're reading all these negative comments on Facebook.
Yeah, I completely agree. That definitely happens, especially when it happens so often. There'll be one or two people that have multiple accounts that are just commenting the same thing on all of a candidate's social medias, and you block them, but then they've got a new account. It's just, you can't let it get to you.
Right.
Just, and you, no comment, not your problem.
Yeah, no comment, basic no response, right?
Yeah.
But there are times where you want to be empathetic, you want to be able sympathetic to what people's concerns are, but again, not feel like you have to respond to every single comment. And people take different approaches to their Facebook fan pages in politics. I've always taken the approach that it's your page, and therefore you have the right to delete or ban anyone who's being inappropriate on your page.
On campaign pages.
On campaign pages. Now, on official pages, pages that are government pages or government official pages, that's different. There's actually been some sort of legislation and some discussion about what can be deleted and what can't be deleted, because it's considered a public forum. But on political pages...
On your fan page. On the campaign page, basically.
Right, basically your campaign page, you should be able to, you know...
Hide inappropriate comments.
Yeah. And I'm
it's not just mean comments. Sometimes they're just outright inappropriate.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And even when you put the blockers that prevent, you know, foul language, is still concerned.
they get creative.
They do. They do.
Do you know where no comment came from?
No, I don't. I don't know the history of no comment.
Like, so, is that like some kind of school of thought? Like, someone thought they were brilliant and that was like the go-to, like, no comment, and this is why.
No, I just think it was just a way to duck, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't have anything to say.
It was the panic. Like, no comment, leave me alone.
Right, right.
Why? Actually, I don't know if there's an answer to this. Why do people feel that they owe the media a comment?
That's a good question, right? So why do you even have to engage in a conversation to begin with?
So no comment's inappropriate, but why do we owe the media a comment?
Because they're the media. and that's actually a good point, because as we see more and more use of social media and people being able directly to message to voters, the role of media is changing in the conversation that we're having with voters, right?
Especially traditional media, specifically, like the newspaper. I don't buy the newspaper. I read my free article limit online and... get the rest elsewhere.
Yes, and I, the Generation Xer, do buy the newspaper and read it every day. But yeah, I think you do see the role, and I think journalists are understanding the changing role that they have too. So you see mm-hmm. them now doing podcasts, doing Facebook Live, doing things that are sort of out of the traditional newsroom that they used to do in the past mm-hmm. because they understand that the media consumption is changing. But, you know,
I would read it. They just make their pricing structure so weird. But that's another episode.
That's another episode. Pricing structures of online of newspapers. Yeah, it can be expensive.
They need a better app.
But, yeah, so I think we're still in an age where we have to continue having these relationships with the media. And it seems difficult, too, as we get into... There was a time when we always thought media was sort of neutral, right, where they... weren't taking sides. I know.
Right? Not in my life.
Yeah. In my lifetime, there was a time where we always considered, you know, media to be neutral. And I think the hardest thing as candidates is to, you know, how do you engage with media who you know don't share your values, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are a liberal candidate...
Why would you go on Fox and Friends?
Yeah, why would you go on a, you know, a more conservative... radio outlet or TV outlet, right? And then the question, you know, and so it really begs the question, what do you have to gain from mm-hmm. doing those kinds of shows? And I don't want to be able to give advice and say, oh, you should never do them or you should do them. I think each case you have to
depends
sort of
on the circumstance and
right.
really what depends. They said they were going to ask you about.
Right, right, right. Because sometimes, you know, the last thing I think in that we want in terms of a democracy is being able to, you know, to not have a discussion, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's what keeps our democracy thriving, is to be able to have a rich and robust conversation about what we feel on the issues. But if liberals aren't willing to go on conservative talk shows and conservatives aren't willing to come on liberal talk shows, then it, you know, mm-hmm. then it becomes essentially one-sided. And there's been research actually that shows that we become very self-selective in the type of media that we watch and news that we read. We tend to be gravitating towards things that that mirror our values.
Why am I going to read something that's just going to upset me?
Right. So you end up reading things that tend to actually mirror what you believe and already think. Which is funny because I have friends that listen to very extreme talk radio, and they'll come back and tell me, I'm like, how can you listen to that? Because I do have a hard time listening to things that I don't agree with.
Yeah.
It's not
even necessarily that I don't agree with them. It's just the way they talk about issues. Like, where is your humanity?
Right, right. But then the question, too, is like, you know, do we as informed citizens and engaged citizens, you know, do we have an obligation to listen to the other side? I know, like, NPR was trying to do this thing where they, you know, brought two people from, you know, conflicting sides so they could have a conversation, right, and not yell mm-hmm. yell and scream at each other to see if that we actually had, you know, common ground versus total hating each other. So choosing whether or not to come on a to go on an extreme perspective mm-hmm. media, I think it has to really be decided on an individual basis and then what you're trying to accomplish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because every election is different. Some elections are primaries, some elections are general elections. And so they're going to really kind of determine the kind of media that you should come on. And I would say, though...
And how?
Right.
How does primary... No, I'm asking you.
Oh, how?
Yeah. How does the election determine what kind of media you should pursue?
Well, I think you want to be talking to your voters. And mm-hmm. so if you're running in a Republican primary, coming out on conservative talk radio would probably be a really good idea because mm-hmm. you're reaching voters who participate in Republican primaries. If you're running in a Democratic primary, probably coming out on a conservative talk show is not going to be your best your best move. And although people will say, oh, well, you know, they're doing that so that in the general election they'll get, you know,
Have name ID.
But at the end of the day, you've got to get past that primary first before you can ever end up on that general ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important that, you know, they decide that first. And another important thing, and we've kind of seen this actually at the presidential level, where they keep media from access to the candidate. And I've never really quite understood that because I know we talk about media giving one perspective of the other versus mm-hmm. being neutral.
That's so weird, though.
Yeah.
I've seen that, and I'm not like that with our clients. I just line the press up. You get 2 minutes.
Right. So I think you kind of end up in dangerous territory when, you know, especially if they're coming to you, mm-hmm. You're having a press conference, and in the press conference you're letting some media in and others out.
I think it's hard.
It's not cool, but it's also difficult because if you feel like you are being attacked by a certain media, I could understand sort of the reluctance to want to let them in the room, if you will. But I think that by shutting them out, it gives them more fodder, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gives them more reason to continue the attack.
Yeah. I feel like, too, that's just kind of the price you pay as an elected official. Like, people aren't going to agree with you. There will be media coming against you, but you can't violate their paper's First Right Amendment to be in the room as part of the press because they don't like you.
Right, right. And I think, you know, the number one rule and probably why people invoke the no comment is because they, you know, think about lying to the press, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, rule number one, never say no comment. Rule number two, never lie to the press.
Yeah. They will find out.
Yes, they will.
And they
find
will
out.
Tell on you. And then people will care what they have to say.
Exactly. Yeah. So no comment and lying to the press would be definitely under the top two no-nos of what, you know, what to do with the press, because it will always come back at you. It may not come back at you right away, but eventually it will catch up to you.
Yeah.
And so you have to be very careful. That doesn't mean you
especially
have to...
Especially when you're up for re-election.
Right.
And fun stuff always comes out.
And it doesn't mean you have to spill your guts and, you know, tell everyone everything. But out-out lies, I think, can be very, very dangerous.
That's why it's better to pivot to an unrelated topic at all.
Right.
Than to lie.
Right. Than to lie. You do not want to lie to the press. I think that is... and then people will tell me, well, but Laura, but the press lies. You know, why should I not lie if they're lying? And at the end of the day, you know, we have to...
I don't think they necessarily lie. I think that they write with their lens. I mean, they have an agenda. We have an agenda. Everyone's got an agenda. They're writing their own perspective. But I don't know about necessarily lying.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are, you know, and with social media and sort of... fake news out there, because there really is fake news out there, believe it or not.
Yes.
There is fake news. You do have to be careful. And, you know, if there is a fake news story that's been written about you or a candidate that you care about, you also have to be careful about calling out that fake news, because by calling out that fake news, you're actually spreading the fake news.
Oh, yeah.
So that's always a kind of an interesting conundrum to be in, right? How do you respond to an attack? And I think maybe we should talk about doing a podcast on that in the future, is how do you...
It's on my list.
Perfect. How do you respond to attacks? Because I think, obviously, the no comment is, as this podcast is going to share, you'll have learned, do not say no comment. But I think we can spend another podcast talking about how you deal with attacks and how you pivot on those.
Just don't engage. Because if they see their wildness getting engagement, they'll keep... escalating their situation or their stories.
All right, well, I think that kind of wraps up our discussion on the no comment. So remember, a cardinal rule of effective public relations is to never, ever, ever say no comment. And I hope you've enjoyed our podcast today, and we'll be...
Viva Politics. Follow us on Instagram at Viva Politics Pod, and then on Twitter at Viva Politics. And if you have an idea or you wanted to ask us something or have an episode idea, tweet us.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Follow us. Send us a DM.
Yeah. And with that, I'll say no comment.
Bye.